Hello and welcome to Exploring Astrology Conversations. I'm your host, Soma. Thank you so much for listening. Friends, and welcome to another episode of Exploring Astrology Conversations. Today I'm joined by Austin Kopic, and we are talking mostly about the Taurus new moon that is just on the horizon. So there's lots of discussion about the Tower card, some of the current transits, and other such meanderings. it's a really long interview. Nearly an hour, so I'm not going to waste much time in delivering the goods. So I really hope you enjoy the conversation with Austin, and I will see you on the other side. Welcome again to the show, Austin.
Hey, thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. So we're talking just before the Taurus new moon. Hasn't happened yet, but soon enough. I was wondering maybe what some of your thoughts were about this Taurus new moon happening at 13 degrees.
Well, I've had a number of thoughts on the subject. Many of them hopefully making their way into the blog. I will hopefully finish by tonight or tomorrow. But I guess I have a hard time seeing this new moon outside of the context of the season that we're in.
Hmm.
You know, we're at the tail end of, oh, I wouldn't say unprecedented, but a very rare multitude of planets in Aries.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a minimum of 5 planets in Aries since April 1st, when Mars joined the party.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for all of April, we had 5 planets in Taurus. And, no, excuse me, 5 planets in Aries,
right?
And that's just, that's so much fire. It's so much raw energy. And what I've seen is, excuse me. I'm a little slow to generalize about what I've seen because it's gone down a lot of different ways for a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll just stick with there's been a tremendous and often kinetic release of raw energy. Some of it released from existing structures, just as physically fire liberates the energy bound in form. By ripping apart the structure,
mm-hmm.
right? We obviously see that in the social structures that have been inflamed in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
And in China, though we hear less about that, and in, God, in American politics. But I've seen a lot of the fire liberating energy,
mm-hmm.
In people's lives. The tower card from the tarot seems, which contains that meaning, seems to have been handed out in abundance. A lot of people have been getting tower cards.
Mm-hmm.
But the tower cards have been, handed out over the last month, and a lot of them even got handed out in March with Uranus's ingress into Aries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been all this, like, holy shit, energy. I guess you're not too big on censorship. I can probably say shit occasionally.
You can say whatever you want, man. This isn't public
All right, cool.
television.
I'm pretty naturally vulgar, so I'll just go with that.
Yeah, just be
but
vulgar.
Anyway, so there's been this, there's been this ongoing release of energy, right? Some of it blocked by form, that form attacked then to liberate that energy from it. And then there's also been a release of energy from within people. The like, oh my God, I never knew that I could be this before. I never knew that I could choose this before.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of, the, how should we say, the they're released in a psychodynamic model, like unconscious energy is being released and becoming conscious, you know, in that volcanic manner, where you're like, oh my God, you know, I could do that. Oh my God, I've never thought that, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so we've had all this, like, all of this, this explosive, sometimes destructive release of energy. And then, you know, and that's, you know, we had Uranus in Aries and Mars in Aries, and Mercury was retrograde, right? Which I find Mercury, for those who don't follow this closely, Mercury was retrograde from the end of March until about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mercury retrogrades tend to thin the veil. The particular veil I'm speaking about is the membrane that separates the conscious from the unconscious. And so you get all this stuff just like, you know, coming up out of nowhere. And there's been a period of chaos, or a period of,
mm-hmm.
at the very least, what do I do with all this?
No doubt.
Right? So I'm seeing myself from a new angle. I'm seeing my future from a new angle. I'm seeing my country from a new angle. But then, you know, there's been a lot of, like, it's sort of like tower energy released. Okay, what the hell? And, you know, since Mercury went direct and the Sun went into Taurus, there's been this movement towards bringing order to this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because we don't, how should we say, the energy is not released, or, you know, the process, the tower process, right? Where the energy that's
hold on, just pause. You keep
yeah.
referencing the tower, just for all the listeners, like, illuminate the tower card for everyone who may not be familiar.
So, so the tower card is number 16 in the major arcana of the tarot. The major arcana are the 22 cards that separate a tarot deck from a standard card deck. These are the ones with the big, big human archetypal themes, like the devil, the moon, the sun, the priestess, the emperor, right?
Mm.
And so the tower is number 16, and it's usually depicted as a tower which has been struck by lightning, and there are people falling out of the tower on fire.
Mm-hmm.
The tower, like in the Rider-Waite, for example, the tower also often has a crown on it, which has been knocked off by the lightning, right? And so what this image represents fundamentally is the, so the tower is an accretion of energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we build towers, right? What's the point of building a tower versus a house? Well, towers are not good places to live. They're harder to build than houses. You know, they're rather fragile in regard to environmental stress. You build a tower so that you can survey and control, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do we build, you know, what are towers? You build a tower so you can get up in it and you can throw rocks and arrows and gunfire down on somebody from far away who might try to take your land, right? Towers are defensive structures, right? They're there to, you know, they artificially elevate a person. I wouldn't say artificially. They physically elevate the people inside them, and then they also protect them,
mm-hmm.
so that they can hold that territory,
mm-hmm.
right? So where do you find towers? You find towers on borderlands,
mm-hmm.
right? It's the towers that survey and hold the border, right? It's a watchtower.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of see them like teeth, right? But anyway, so the idea in the tower card is that any fortification like this, where all your energy is going into protecting and holding, is based on the idea of stability and control. And the idea that you can control things,
mm-hmm.
and that stability in this case, like geographical stability, is an ideal thing, right? And so the crown represents the idea of trying, or represents the attempt to have authority over, how should we say, the dynamic process of nature or of the universe, right? You're trying to own something. Mm-hmm. And we can get into the whole issue of the idea of ownership, mm-hmm. right? Not everybody believed in ownership, right? but anyway, so you've got this power trying to control things. But if we look at the, if we look at this just in this very sort of mundane nations holding their borders sort of perspective, what nation has held the same borders for 100 years, right? You know, much less 1,000 years. You know, borders change. Power dynamics are inherently fluid, and within our lives, we have we build towers to say, "This is mine, mm-hmm. and this is me," mm-hmm. right? and so, there comes a time when we keep investing in these towers and investing in them, right? We can look at the U.S.'s involvement in Iraq right now. As building a tower there, right? Mm-hmm. A tower is basically a military base, mm-hmm. right? So we put all this time and energy and money because we're trying to control things there, right? Because what happens there reflects on us, on our national ego, and so, you know, we better make sure things go the right way. But the tower card catches the tower at a critical moment, not when it's being built, but when it can no longer hold back the inevitable. And that's why the force destroying the tower in the card is lightning, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't hold back lightning, and it's traditionally it's a finger of God, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because in at least the Rider-Waite tarot, which many tarot decks are derived from, many of the hundreds are mostly derivatives, unfortunately. You see these little weird yellow sort of flakes coming down with the lightning, mm-hmm. and those little weird yellow flakes are actually the Hebrew letter Yod. And Yod actually means finger. One of the meanings. In astrology, coincidentally, we call a Yod configuration between planets, the finger of God. Mm-hmm. And it basically, like in Kabbalah, those are basically pure spirit flakes, right? It's pure, raw spiritual energy that's being released, mm-hmm. right? But it's not only being released, it's also, it's that energy which is exploding the tower. Mm-hmm. Right, so we're at this critical moment where the tower is overwhelmed, and we are forced to admit that this is not something that we can control, right? And so the tower is essentially a snapshot of a moment of crisis and change, mm-hmm. right? And the crisis is already happening. They're like, oh my God, we can't control things. The tower is burning. Right. No matter, you know, and we must take off the crown. We have to put down we have to put down the conceit that we can control this area. Right. In a sense, the crown being knocked off is discorporating this area from our ego. It's no longer part of the ego. Right. Because we can't control it, and it's not inside us anymore. And so, basically, it's this explosive release of energy. Because what's great, it would be great for the United States, if we, if we let go of if we dismantled some of our towers, is that you get to use all those bricks for something else, and you get to use all those soldiers, which have been manning the crenellations on the tower wall, for somewhere else. You know, you get to use all that stuff because the tower, you know, a tower is an incredibly labor-intensive project.
Sure.
When I was pondering slash meditating slash whatever you want, scrying, whatever words you want to use, Pluto in Capricorn, when it first ingressed in, I believe, January of 08, I was like, I'm going to get this guy's number right away. I saw this vision of a great black step pyramid, right? And I saw it burning. And I was like, oh, that's really creepy and appropriate. And I got really into the idea of the step pyramid, and I started going over it, and I thought to myself, wow, the step pyramid is actually the world's first tower.
You mean the idea of a step pyramid, like looking at the Egyptians and the Mayan step pyramids, like that's the first tower?
Yeah, and the Babylonians, the Sumerians.
Okay.
It's like a step pyramid. Step pyramid is the first tower, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you build something up high when you don't have a lot of architecture? You know, when you don't have the materials or the know-how to build something, it just goes straight up. How do you get up? How do you create height in the physical world, in the building world, right? You build a step pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I had a cool point. I was going to wrap the step pyramid back into...
Maybe the square, huh? The square to Uranus from Pluto? This isn't an intuition.
let's come back to that. And I promise I will come back to that and make sense out of it and not just leave a hanging step pyramid. Leave it to Pluto to derail a discussion. Anyway, so tower card, it's an area that was under, that we tried to control, that we are forced to admit is not under our control, and we get all that energy back. But the experience is usually crisis, right? And that can be internal or it can be external.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so we've been through this, there was this tower period. A lot of the early part of spring was full of tower cards. Certainly full of tower cards for governments in North Africa and the Middle East, for the people of Japan, right? With the nuclear power, they're like, oh, we can control this. It's no problem. You know, we got this shit unlocked. That's my crown over there sitting on top of it.
Mm.
No. Not under control, right? The whole like release of energy and all the sort of metaphorical stuff takes on a rather horrifying dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And it applies so literally to the burning building, you know, with the energy being released and all that.
Sure.
Anyway, so we've come through this period, right? And then there's the, okay, what the hell do we do about it? And I think that question has been floating for the last week or two. They're not necessarily answered. I'd say we've been moving in the direction of what the hell do we do about it, but that's not the same thing as having the answer, right?
Right.
But yeah, we begin moving in the direction of a place long before we arrive. And so this Taurus new moon is really interesting because it brings us to how should we say, it opens the act of the play where we actually figure out what our answers are going to be. Right?
Yeah.
The question was looming at the last act close, but in that a new moon renews the cycle and also resets the stage a little bit for the whole next lunar cycle.
Mm-hmm.
This is as earthy as it gets. Right, it's new moon in Taurus.
Yeah.
It's the sun and it's Taurus's lunar cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but about halfway through this cycle, right before the full moon in Scorpio on the 16th, we have a massive exodus of planets from Aries.
Mm-hmm.
On the 10th, Mars leaves Aries and moves into Taurus, which will take the wind out of the sails of the rest of the planets in Aries. And then on the 15th, we have both Mercury and Venus lead areas for Taurus, right? And so if we just kind of look at the weighting of the different planets, we're moving from 5 planets in Aries to 2 planets in Aries and 4 planets in Taurus.
Right.
So that's, when there's a lot of fire in a given chart, whether it's, a time period that we're living or in an individual or entity's natal chart, a lot of fire means a lot of raw energy.
Right.
And particularly raw in the case of Aries. But now, with the cycle we're moving into, there's with all of this stuff in Taurus, there's so much. So much depends upon practical answers and what do we do? What does all this mean? So yeah, what are you gonna do? They're like, yeah, there's all this crazy shit and blah 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 on an international level, right? Like with all the unrest. So it's like, okay, well, so how are we going to treat this government? This newly formed Egyptian government. Who are its allies going to be? What's its tax structure going to be? Right? It's all very mundane and very necessary questions that have to come about as things recoalesce, as things re-solidify. Mm. Now, it's not that we're now moving into an incredibly stable period where everything will go as it has for decades and everyone's fears will be allayed. The next month is stabilizing relative to the period that we're coming out of.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that's different than a stable period, right? Stabilizing influences do not necessarily mean that a period is stable, right?
Right.
Where it's like a car going 150 miles an hour over rough terrain, but it's got a good, stabilizing system. It's got some good shocks, right? We're not slowing down. This is just a period where the suspension gets worked on a little bit.
I like that. Yeah.
But anyway, so the metaphor, I work through metaphor both to communicate as well as to understand. I think the structure of the universe is metaphorical as much as it is anything else. And, the metaphors that I've been kind of working with are planting seeds, like in scorched earth, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got this sort of blasted... this sort of blasted lava-strewn landscape where, there's all the shells of these towers, and some are still under attack, and it's kind of traditionally hellish. And the question is, we've got this energy, this raw energy, right? But the question is, it needs to transform this landscape. How do you transform a landscape? Well, you plant things in it, right? And so I've been kind of thinking of the energy release from this period is like little glowing, fiery, raw seeds of spirit and energy. Does that make sense?
Perfect. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. There's a scorched forest right outside my window, by the way, so your metaphor is very apt.
Oh, excellent. I was wondering if I was going a little too doomy.
it's doomy up here.
The underworld. Go ahead.
Well, no, I'll just share how literal your metaphor is just from where I'm at. I mean, there was a huge fire that, like, decimated 250,000 acres last August. And, there's black trees right outside my window. And, like, the fertility of it, you can feel it. It's tangible. But, like, during all of this, like, tower period, like you're describing, there was, like, war helicopters, like, transporting all of this hay all over the mountains and the canyon and stuff like that for weeks, just like helicopters, helicopters, helicopters. And they're trying, it's erosion control, but also there's seeds within it, so they're trying, save the landscape and heal it, so.
I thought of, as I've been working with these metaphors, and I've had kind of this ongoing metaphor for maybe the last month and a half of columns, some of it intentional and some of it just ended up that way.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I thought a lot about the trees whose seeds will only sprout after a fire.
Yeah.
But it was a little, I don't know. I decided to go with a sort of a more fantastic and myth-oriented sort of direction, because I'm a fighter.
Yeah.
But the natural analog is there too, and the image of the burning tower versus the burning tree. That's an easy transposition. And in many cases, I think internally, I'm not sure if we build towers so much as we grow trees. Does that make sense? You know, if we're talking about mapping or modeling psychic structure, I don't know if we do it with bricks. You know, I think we grow certain complexes. We nourish them, and they're nourished by the sort of ecosystem of our psyche.
Mm-hmm.
That's food for thought for me. I'm going to think about trees versus towers. but anyway, that's a little bit more natural, right?
Tree is good for Taurus.
Maybe we should aspire to grow trees instead of build towers.
Yeah, tree is good. I think you can learn everything about Taurus from a tree.
Interesting. I got one more little thing to say sort of. You know, this planting of seeds, right? So I think right in this next week, especially this like first week of May, is especially fecund for sowing seeds, because Venus, who is traditionally very concerned with creativity and fecundity, Venus is one of the fertility factors in the chart. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to see whether a woman can or will get pregnant in a chart, Venus is right there.
Mm-hmm.
She's not out of the marriage, but her activity does make babies,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what's cool is, as of tomorrow, I believe, Venus will be clear her opposition with Saturn.
Yeah.
Venus was in Aries, right? And Venus entered Aries, oh God, a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
But Venus's jaunt through the first part of Aries has been super rough.
Mm-hmm.
Right as she first entered the sign conjunction with Uranus, next couple days square to Pluto, that was last Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then since last Tuesday, she's been moving into an opposition with Saturn.
Mm.
And although these are necessary, and alchemizing these aspects can yield wisdom and all sorts of good stuff like that, Pluto and Saturn, especially aspecting Venus by square and opposition, or hard aspects, suppress the soft, fun, loose expression of the energy which Venus favors.
Definitely.
Right? And so we're moving into this cool period, right, where until Venus hits the Taurus boundary, Venus is unafflicted.
Right.
Venus, use the technical term. And so Venus is chasing Mercury, and she'll chase him by, like, she's a couple degrees away now, and she's get right on top of him. They're basically going to move in unison, and then those two are both going to conjoin Jupiter,
mm-hmm.
which is just lovely.
Yes,
like, that's so creative, so creative and cool. And part of the reason why I'm focusing on Venus is that Venus is the ruler of Taurus.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And the sun is in Taurus. What is this lunar cycle? It's the sun and Taurus cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and part of the way I understand that is, well, Taurus is all about the coherence or connection between different things, which binds them together into a mass, like
right.
a big mass, like a cow, right?
Right.
You have to have lots of cohering energy to keep all that in one place.
Mm.
And so it's like, you know, like if you're going to, if you want to accumulate a lot of something, you have to create an emotional connection between you and that lot of something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that pulls it to you, that keeps it together, right? It's holding power. And and we certainly, after having been liberated of some of our existing structures, we naturally move towards holding something else. Or some people will attempt to move back into exactly the same patterns that they were in before. But, you know, there's this alternation between freedom and, between, should I say, freedom and structural engagement, right, where we're trying to make something happen. It's like a natural dialectic. So, yeah, and so it's this holding power of Venus that is key to that. It's key to that process, and you know, all the Aries, you know, often Venus's yearly move through Aries is not a big event, but because there's so much energy there right now, so much has been released and converted into this raw form of spirit / energy. That the Aries represents, that her fecund power, moving, transforming that energy into seeds, into something which can grow, is just, I feel like it's part of the secret key to what's going on right now. And I know what that means for me, and I know what that means for, you know, select other people, but I feel like with these seeds, they're like, ah, you know what, because, you know, because my cage blew up. I didn't realize it was a cage, but my cage blew up, and then I had these ideas, and now I can plant them. Right? Now I can. Now the ability, and this is planting time. This isn't harvest time, and it's literally planting time.
I would like to add too that I mean, everything you're saying is like amazing. And then on the 10th or 11th, I don't know exactly what day it is that Venus and Mercury are both conjunct Jupiter, but that's also the release of Mercury, you know, from the whole retrograde cycle. So like that's interesting.
That clearing the shadow degrees, right? Good point. Right? Where we move on, you know, one of the things, one of the ways I see the moving out of the shadow is that we get to answer new questions. Right? In some ways, for the entire fucking retrograde cycle, it's the same questions.
Yeah.
It's the same problem, right? But then when Mercury or any planet breaks its shadow, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, new questions, new challenges.
Yeah.
Which, you know, may or may not be fun, but there is a pleasure in engaging the new when one has become very tired of a given set of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right, but to contextualize all this, right?
Sure.
We're not moving, you know, we're not moving into a stable period. We're moving into a stabilizing period.
Mm-hmm.
And what we got a real taste of, like for the first time, is what Uranus and Aries square Pluto and Capricorn really feels like and what it does. They aren't exactly square yet. Or excuse me, they're square they're well within the orb of squaring, although they haven't made a perfect aspect yet. They don't do that till next year.
Right.
And oh, do they do that next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that, for those who don't know, the Uranus-Pluto square is the new Saturn-Uranus opposition, right? We just got done with this multi-year period of Saturn-Uranus oppositions, which really shook the shit out of things. And that's, you know, we got done with that last year, and so that sort of started fade out. We've got this new thing, right? We've got the Uranus-Pluto squares, and they're going to be running for, next 4 years. It's the new battle between the gods, right?
Mm.
And as a number of astrologers have amply noted, looking at history through the lens of mundane astrology in a really brilliant way, Rick Tarnas, but it's the book, not Passion of the Western Mind, which is astrology one, I'm blanking for some reason.
Oh, Cosmos and Psyche.
Yeah, Cosmos and Psyche,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
As Rich Harness demonstrates beautifully in Cosmos and Psyche, It's the relationships between the outer planets, which move very slowly, that are the scaffolding upon which history hangs.
Definitely.
And so we, you know, this is our new thing. Everything else is going to be moving in relationship to this, right?
Mm.
And for those, you know, for those who don't know, we've got Pluto in Capricorn. Is actually Pluto in Capricorn calls for the transformation of institutions and structures of the way we interact with the physical world,
mm-hmm.
Both financial and environmental. Right,
mm-hmm.
Obviously the way that we interact with the natural world is getting closer to a crisis point.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we interact with the financial world, the way that we, in a sense, the way that we do, the way that we organize the act, our financial activity, which is just literally the trading back and forth of the things that we either found in or made in nature. Right?
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
what finances are. It's like, hey, I found this and then made this out of it. Will you give me something else that you found or made?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very concrete activity, despite the degree to which it's been abstracted. It's obviously at a crisis point which hasn't been resolved. Right? So we've got this Pluto in Capricorn which is calling for this. And whenever Pluto calls for change, it is permanent and lasting change. Right? It's a call down to the underworld or the land of not. Right? The land of you don't get to exist anymore. or this form no longer gets to exist anymore, right? If we look at Pluto as the god of the dead, when the god of the dead calls you, all you get to keep is your shade or your spirit, right? You don't get to keep anything else.
Did you say shade?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And so you're stripped of everything except that which cannot be stripped,
mm-hmm.
right? And people's response to Pluto's call is usually a resounding fuck no,
hmm.
right? Especially on a collective level, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think about, what does it, you know, tell Goldman Sachs? Well, Pluto, you know, he's calling you and you're going to have to change the way you do business and or the U.S. military or you know, any of this stuff, right? you know, the response is in... Well, the response is fight or flight. I'm going to die if I don't defend myself against these threats,
mm-hmm.
right? And so when people get Plutoed, especially when collectives get Plutoed, they respond by doing the opposite thing as hard and fast as possible,
mm.
right? Like when the right before the credit card companies got slightly more regulated, I believe it was last year, they made as much money as possible off of people before the new laws took effect.
Mm-hmm.
And they, so when something is targeted for extinction, it tries, you know, any organic entity will try as hard as possible, even when it's futile, to resist that. I was watching a nature program the other day with lions, and there were five lions attacking like a water buffalo, the water buffalo had no chance. There were literally five lions, like one was standing on its back, the other was like hanging from its neck, and they're just, you know, there's on top of it, and it won't even sit down. It's just trying to stand,
mm.
and then, you know, it's on the ground like literally being torn apart, and it's like trying to get him with its horns, right?
Mm.
One of the virtues of life is its tenacity.
Mm.
Sometimes, you know, foolish tenacity, but anything made up of anything that has the component of life,
mm.
you know, life energy, just won't go down. Won't go down without a fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's our inheritance from the natural world. And unfortunately, it doesn't always work to our benefit. And so we have this big call for change. We have all these, I wouldn't say, see, to say that Pluto calls for change is not accurate. Pluto calls for negation, right?
Hmm.
The god of the dead just gets rid of things. Like, you're not there anymore. And what that does is it creates space for change,
mm-hmm.
right? But change, I think, implies a shift from one situation to another situation. And I think Pluto negates the current situation, and then that leaves room for us to create within that. Now, Uranus and Aries, is an incredibly maniacally creative energy, right? Uranus, if we look at the mythology of Uranus, right, the mm-hmm. Greek Uranus, he's Saturn's dad, or he's Cronus's dad,
mm-hmm.
right? He is one of the most primordial creators in Greek myths. Right? It's Uranus and Gaia. Basically, heaven and earth got wild, and everything else came from there. Right? All the generations of the Titans, and then the gods after them. Everything comes from from the tantric intercourse of heaven and earth, with Uranus being heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I say heaven in like a Chinese sense, where it's all of that which is above. I'm not referring specifically to the Christian heaven, right?
Sure, sure,
but
sure.
The heavens, the height. And anyway, but Uranus is about, it's about the creative power of what is above, what is still abstract, issuing downward in the form of a lightning bolt. One of my pet definitions is it is the power of the unmanifest manifesting, right? It's the invisible becoming visible through a display of power,
mm-hmm.
right? What is invisible? Anything that doesn't have form currently. All of the sides of yourself, all of the facets of who you are, which have not gotten to play out in your life, are invisible yet have power. You know, all of the facets of our collective psyche, which have not gotten to become part of culture, but are still there. Those are, you know, it's the latent charge expressing itself, and, you know, issuing forth into being, right? Because what does a lightning bolt do? It connects heaven and earth, right? And it's generated only by the friction, the electromagnetic friction between them.
Hmm.
And so, and then Aries, good Lord, Aries is a very creative sign, right? It's, it's the Rolls Royce of cardinal signs as far as, raw, fresh bursts of energy go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what's interesting is, you know, we have this process of creation and destruction with Pluto and Uranus sort of entwined together. And actually, you know, if we analyze the aspect, the square, almost interfering with each other. In some ways, it seems like it would be easier if Pluto came in and bulldozed everything, and then Uranus came in and, you know, and created afresh. But we have this anxious need to create, a better world
mm-hmm.
right now. Right.
Yes.
Ask people in North Africa if they can wait for Pluto to move out of Capricorn, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this anxious need to fucking make it happen. There's a vision, you know, and then there are all these, you know, then there's all of the slow move. There's the slow moving destruction of Pluto,
mm-hmm.
which in a long term sense, the negation that Pluto bestows on things is totally making room for the creation that Uranus inspires us to engage in. But in practice, we have to return to how people and entities react to Pluto's call, right?
Mm-hmm.
They react by building twice as many towers, right? They're like, wow, controlling things is a lot harder now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we better redouble our efforts at control.
Hmm.
And so these fresh new ideas and this revolutionary fervor ends up facing Gaddafi's army, right?
Hmm.
And ends up facing unprecedented measures of control in China. Here, China figured out a way to censor the internet. They thought it couldn't be done. They thought it couldn't be done, right? But China figured it out. They're, you know, genius culture, but, you know, sometimes for the wrong things. They figured out how to censor the internet, right?
Yeah,
you know, you have like, wow, that's a remarkable level of control. You know, what one could easily call fascist. But anyway, and so in this sense, it actually makes the sort of revolutionary intent of that we see embodied in Uranus and Aries, and the Uranus and Aries sort of stokes and stimulates facing a wall of guns, right? Or facing a wall of guns arrayed at the top of towers, right? To go back to our previous definition. Now, what's really interesting to me about this Pluto stuff, and now I'm going to link this back to my vision of the burning pyramid, right?
Cool. And try to make it concluding, too. We're running out of time.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah.
So back in early 2008, I see this burning pyramid. It's a black step pyramid that's burning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's really interesting. I was like, so I needed that as I was like, well, the step pyramid is sort of a physical representation of class in society, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have most people at the bottom, right? And everybody else's weight is on them. And then you had, so let's say we have the like, well, in traditional societies would be the slave class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or those with, you know, those who are forced to do the most thankless labor, right? So maybe it's people who work in the service industry in America.
Mm-hmm.
People who work at Walmart, right? You have no benefits. And then we've got, you know, then we've got another layer on top of that. We've got the skilled laborers or whatever. And then we keep going up and up and up and up. Right? And I was like, oh, that's really interesting because this is like a model of society, a hierarchical model of society.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, and that's burning. I was like, so that means that this is like being troubled, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this model, that the like, you know, the levels are being troubled. And that's certainly happening. While Pluto, one thing I will say is that while Pluto is in Capricorn, class is already starting to, but class will be part of the equation again. I think the specter of Marx has been called by Ouija boards all across the world. You know, with the globalization of capitalism, you have the globalization of the type of class conflict that capitalism generates,
mm-hmm.
which was what Marx was analyzing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got that. But anyway, so I started doing research on step pyramids and pyramids burning. And I was thinking like Aztec, because I was reading this Greek anthropology book called City of Sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
about the structure of Aztec society and how it mirrored their cosmology, and that their cities were built to mirror, to be like a microcosm of all of society and all of their cosmology.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're talking about basically how, you know, the city, the empire needs to eat, right? They're like, there need to be people sacrificed atop that pyramid in order for the whole thing to work. And the author, whose name I can't remember, extends this metaphor to the model of the city in general, right? He's like, the cities need to eat. They need
sure.
to eat their underclass, right? Anyway, so I'm going through this, and I'm like, oh, let's look at it. I was like, well, what about when the Aztecs are destroyed by the Spanish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the last time, or not the last time, it was when Pluto was in Capricorn. Not the last time, but the time before that.
Really?
Right? And so there are literally, you know, burning step pyramids and, you know, and blood running down them and people falling off of them. Like, that whole model got replaced with a different model. And that's sort of the sad thing about Pluto and Capricorn, is it brings up these almost, at this point, what might as well be eternal issues for the humans, right? That we have to live on step pyramids.
Yes.
Right? That was, and the last time that Pluto was in Capricorn, we had the American Revolution. And that was basically, fuck this, we don't want to live in a step pyramid anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? With a king on top. But, you know, and many have argued that class has always been America's blind spot. We have, you know, Pluto and Capricorn natally. And, you know, as we look at what's happening right now, we're looking at how incredibly stratified American society is. And, you know, the particular forms it's taken and all that. And, you know, this this particular step pyramid probably will get taken down to some degree, but it will be replaced. You know, that's what it's... And unfortunately, history moves incrementally. Even during periods where there's crazy revolution, and I don't think there's going to be like an armed revolution in the United States. Let me just clear that off the plate.
Yeah.
But you know, we're all gazing at the step pyramid, and people are looking at it internationally. They're like, oh, well, and I guess that's the big pyramid, right? That's the real pyramid. Is the what nations are on the bottom of the pyramid must bear the weight of those above them. Right? And one thing that does consistently happen during Pluto and Capricorn is the current emperor gets dethroned.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
In the United States, for this last really about 20 years, which isn't very long, since the Soviet Union withdrew from the you know, from the arms race, and the United States and capitalism were declared the de facto winners and sat atop the world order, the America gets to do whatever the fuck it wants period mm-hmm. of history. We're leaving that behind. You know, that's the big change. And a lot of other countries, everybody's jockeying for position. I think of the title of a recent and very interesting HBO series, A Game of Thrones.
Mm.
Now, there's a game of musical chairs being played with thrones. Right now, on both a macro and microcosmic level,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that's an important part of the backdrop for this period of history.
Yes.
And hopefully, with the Uranus and Aries for the next several years, we can create something better. Not necessarily. I don't think, you know, I don't know if we're going to get past the. I don't think we're ready to get past the. The hierarchical pyramid, step pyramid model of social organization, but it could be a little bit more equitable, could be a little bit less vertical a tower, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And maybe we could, like, terrace the sides of it, or, you know, the sides of it are kind of terraced. Maybe we could grow some things on them rather than having them be lined with machine gun towers,
ugh.
You know? but, yeah, I don't know. And so, yeah, enjoy the stabilizing effects of the next lunar cycle.
Yeah.
In the context of this very destabilizing period. And I would implore individuals to look within themselves and find their own pyramids.
Mm, I like right? that. That's beautiful.
It's really, oh, cool. And, you know, we may not be able to transform the kingdom of the world in a radical way, but I do believe in the capacity of individuals to transform their own interior landscapes and kingdoms in a radical way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can live in an egalitarian, a completely egalitarian, anarchic, creative state, you know, within yourself. You know, the kingdom of the soul is up to you to govern. And, yeah, which sort of brings me back to... That sort of the single word which I found when I was writing my 2011 guide that I totally left out. I wrote this like essay that brought it all together, and I got nervous and I cut it from the book.
Mm.
And I'm so kicking myself right now. But the word where I saw the whole focus for this yearbook personally and politically was the question of sovereignty.
Mm.
To rule yourself,
mm-hmm.
right? To be self-governed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm.
But there's all with all the great energy being released and blah 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 blah. It doesn't mean anything if you don't do something meaningful with it.
Right.
Right? Freedom doesn't mean anything if you don't do something meaningful with it. And if you don't, and it quickly fades away. And so, you know, to govern yourself, not to govern others, to govern yourself. To quote a KMFDM song, can you govern your soul?
We are the captains of this ship. Aye, aye.
Yeah, dude. Nobody else is going to sail it for you.
No.
Well,
no.
It might, but you'll probably end up, you know, being conscripted to naval service or working in some merchant fleet and somehow not quite accomplishing anything but somebody else's work.
Yeah, how boring, how defeating, how ridiculous. Well, thank you so much for your poetic words, man. You definitely have a lot of amazing things to say. It's a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, it was great. I really enjoyed it. I get to write a lot, but I don't get to talk a lot.
Cool. Well, this is a good space for that. So we'll have you on again.
Great. Well, I thank you for providing this space.
Oh yeah. Of course it's essential, and it seems that a lot of our listeners love it too. So yeah, it's good.
Oh, good. I hope so.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just like, I'm not very, you know, professional or, you know, very structured about any of it. I just kind of like having conversations and letting it flow where it goes. And so people seem to feel at home with that, you know, like it's just something that they can just like throw on and multitask, like cook dinner, drive around, deliver mail, surf, whatever. And yeah, the feedback's good, especially on the interviews or conversations, as I call them. So I'd love to have you on here, man.
Again, my pleasure.
All right. An hour with Austin. I seriously resonated with a lot he was saying about the Tower card and also just his insights into the Mercury retrograde period. The whole questioning process, I guess, of just retrograde periods in general. New questions. And I really feel that. And I want to share this song with you that I'll introduce in a second that I think relates to it very strongly. But before I do, just to give some information, if you're on the Front Range, if you are in Colorado and within driving distance of Boulder, the astrology group is going to begin soon, soon, soon. We're thinking the second week of May, once Mercury goes direct, the whole Mercury-Venus-Jupiter conjunction seems like a good starting point. And so just email me or, you know, find me on Facebook or call me if you want clarification and questions about that. Also, if you or anyone you know or love is seeking insight and maybe wanting an astrology reading, you can contact me too. My email is cosmonosis@gmail.com. That's cosmonosis @gmail.com. And you can also visit me on the web to check out all these podcasts and the blog that I write every once in a while and other fun, juicy tidbits at holdstoheavens.com. And Austin didn't give a plug, but his website is austincopic.com. That's KOPPOCK.com. And he too has a blog. And a 2011 astrological almanac. I think that is such an amazing idea. And he put a lot of good work into creating this thing. And I guess the price of it is about to be cut in half since we're, you know, a good portion of the way through 2011. So go check that out. And, yeah, that's about it for the news. So the song I want to share with you is by Alexander. And Alexander is the lead singer of Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros. And the song's called Truth. And I just love it. It's honest. It's very reflective to Mercury retrograde. And, you know, the first phrase of the entire song is, the truth is that I haven't shook my shadow. And then the chorus is all about the darkness shining and all of this. I I've been listening to this song as if it were a mantra over the past 3 weeks. You know, there's aspects that have been coming up in all of us, I'm sure. And it relates to the shadow, you know, when Mercury's retrograde, he's looking inwards and we're kind of like feeling out all of these parts of ourselves that we skid over and ignore a lot of the time. And so the truth is that we're here. We're human and we haven't shook our shadow. And so may we understand it and be as candid and as truthful as Alexander Ebert. Namaste, my friends. I will see you soon.
Trick me into doing battle, calling out fake up, wanna get me rattled, wanna pull me back behind the fence with the cat, building your lenses, digging your trenches, put me on the front line, leave me with a dumb mind with no defenses, but your defenses. If you can't stand to feel the pain, then you are senseless, senseless. I've grown up some different kind of fighter, and when the darkness comes, let it inside you. Your darkness is shining. My darkness is shining. Seen a million number doors on the horizon. Now which is the future you're choosing before you gon' die? And I'll tell you about a secret I've been undermining. Every little lie in this world come from divine. Say you're my love, say you're my home. Till my chin back, slit my throat, take a bath in my blood, get to know me. All out of my secrets, all my enemies are turning into my teachers. Because light's blinding, no way dividing. What's yours or mine when everything's shining? And your darkness is shining, my darkness is shining. Have faith in ourselves.